Hello and thank you so much for joining me on the show today. This is the Diabetes Show on UK Health Radio, your global, real, feel-good radio station. My name is Peter Alton of Undefeated, and I'm your host for today and the coming weeks. Welcome once again to the Diabetes Show here on UK Health Radio. My name is Peter Alton and I am really pleased to have you listening to the show today. It is a jam-packed show. So much so, in fact, that we actually decided to edit out the last song of the show simply because we had so much content to fit in. So I'm going to quickly go straight into what is in the news in the world of diabetes. Again, gleaning my content from diabetes.co.uk's website. They do a fantastic job of highlighting what's been in the news. So just looking at what's been in there since the last show was recorded. We ended up actually last time with the last item on the agenda being that COVID-19 increased severity by 70% in obese people. And with that theme continuing, of course, we now look at the next item of news that came out, which is obese people and over 50s could be ordered to stay home amid a second wave. Well, I know my doctor has told me that I'm overweight. I'm not actually in the obese category, but I am in the over 50s mark. So am I going to be forced to stay home and not go to work during the second wave if we get a second wave? Who knows? I'm not quite sure where they're going to be going with that one, but if you want to read up on it, you know where to go to. Second one, arthritis drug could help prevent type 1 diabetes progression. This is a rheumatoid arthritis drug called abatacept, and it could be ready within 5 years. They say they're doing a 2-year trial at the moment, and apparently the drug works by preserving the pancreas and its ability to produce insulin, and also suppresses the body's T cells, which are the immune cells that cause type 1 diabetes. Then there's an article on the NHS, where really we all need to be thankful to them in the UK for all that they've done. I guess hospitals around the world we need to be thankful for. But in the NHS, apparently in June, there were more than 1.85 million people having to wait more than 18 weeks for treatment. That number is the highest since records began. And worryingly, there are one of the statistics that's been picked up is breast cancer referrals dropped by 43%. Previous year, 14,885 in June, and this June, only 8,495 referrals for breast cancer. So I suppose it's just a sign that we weren't able to go and see our GPs for things, and therefore those referrals have not been passed on yet. Hopefully the backlog can be worked through very quickly as we move on. The next item is from a study in Copenhagen University, where they have discovered that there's a possible link between the risk of developing type 2 diabetes if you've had a miscarriage. Apparently, if you've had one, it's 18% higher risk. If you've had two, it's 38% higher risk. And three would equate to a 71% increased risk of developing type 2 diabetes. I am whizzing through these because we have got very limited time on the show today. Do go and have a look at more information on diabetes.co.uk's website. Another article there is about a lady who was a campaigner all her life, or pretty much all her life. She has sadly passed away. Joan Carney from Sunderland apparently did a lot of fantastic work. So have a look at that and see if it rings any bells in your head as to maybe something that you could do to raise awareness, something you could do to campaign like she did. At the other end of the spectrum from age 86 is newborn babies. Apparently there's a routine test that can now be done that can check whether newborn babies may be at risk of developing type 1 diabetes. It's not absolutely out there yet. It's getting closer to becoming a reality though. Have a read up on that one. And finally, the last one is really scary, particularly for you Americans. Apparently, one in four people in America have admitted to rationing their insulin supplies since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. This has been a nationwide survey, and the cost of insulin can vary a lot, and people are skipping using it because of the cost of it. So that is really tragic, and hopefully something can be done about that. That's all the items on the news for this week. So I would like to just take us into a song now before we get our guest of the week on. And our guest of the week is Patrick McEwen. He is the author of The Oxygen Advantage, and he is a breathing technique specialist. So breathing can really make a difference in your life. So listen in and hear how it can help you. We're going to listen to a song he chose, which is the song One by U2, sung by U2 and Mary J. Blige. I hope you enjoy it.
Is it getting better? Or do you feel the same? Will it make it easier on you now? You got someone to blame. You say one love, mm-hmm. One life,
one life.
It's one need, and I, mm-hmm.
one love,
get to share it.
Ooh.
Leaves you, darling. You don't care
for it.
One love, one life.
That was Mary J. Blige with U2 and the song One. Hope you enjoyed it. You're listening to The Diabetes Show here on UK Health Radio. And we have a great interview coming up right now, which pretty much any one of you could benefit from if you put into practice some of the things that our guest, Patrick, is going to be saying. So we have with us today Patrick McEwen. He is the author of the book The Oxygen Advantage, and he is a breathing technique expert. And believe me, you will realize that there's a lot of things that proper breathing can benefit you with, including your diabetes. So please give him your full attention and then try putting it into practice. Well, Patrick, it is great to have you on the Diabetes Show here on UK Health Radio. Thank you so much for joining us. Let me just check I've got the pronunciation right. Is it Patrick McEwen or McEwen?
Yeah, that sounds McEwen. McEwen is how it's pronounced.
Okay.
But don't worry, I won't take you to task over it.
Okie dokes. Well, we just played a song which you chose beforehand. I can tell by the accent, this is probably where I go totally wrong, but you probably are from over the water a little bit in Ireland, is that right?
Correct, yeah. I live in a place called Galway. It's on the west coast, so it's a small city, 60,000 people, but it's the fourth largest city here in Ireland.
Okay.
Nice scenic place to be.
Okay, thanks. And the song you chose, of course, was by U2, and Mary J. Mm-hmm. Blige was singing it as well, the song One. Just tell me this is why you chose that song, please.
I think it's a great song about the interconnectedness of, you know, of life in general. I think it's a very spiritual song, and I'm not sure if that was the intended consequences. The tune is great, the lyrics are great, and Mary J. Blige really put something to it. So, yeah, it's one of my favourite songs, listening to it. I always enjoy it.
That's as good a reason as any to play it, so excellent.
Yeah, for sure.
Sure, but this has enjoyed it too. Now, we got you on the show because you're the founder of the do I get this pronunciation correct? Buteyko, is that right? Buteyko Clinic,
yes.
International.
Yeah.
And I really hadn't heard about the man that it was named after until quite recently when we had another guest who I think you know on, Angela, a few weeks back.
Mm-hmm.
But please tell us a little bit about, it was Dr. Buteyko, I believe, and what the clinic is all about as well, please.
So back in 1957, when he was working with sick patients, he began to notice that when patients were unwell, their breathing deteriorated. And he asked the question, was it their sickness which was causing their breathing to change? Or was it possible that their dysfunctional breathing, faster and harder breathing, was feeding back into their sickness? So he started teaching his patients to slow down their breathing, to breathe through the nose, to slow down their breathing, and to breathe from the diaphragm. And he was finding that he was able to make improvements in his patients' health, primarily by having them do one thing, and that was by breathing less. And I know that flies in the face of what's often taught in the Western world about breathing, because normally when breathing is talked about, we're told to breathe harder, we're told to breathe more air, you know, we're told to fill our lungs full of oxygen, to take a deep breath. But Buteyko surmised that the problem was not that people were not breathing enough, the problem was that they were breathing too much. So let's start slowing down their breathing, quietening their breath, calming their breathing. And, you know, he focused his research mainly on carbon dioxide, and he worked with many, many patients. In actual fact, he used this for the application of about 100 different conditions. And with the fall of the Iron Curtain then back in 1989, it didn't get out of Russia until about 1992, 1993. And the BBC did a documentary on this QED investigative program back in 1994. And they looked at three very severe asthmatics from Glasgow, from a hospital in Glasgow. They brought in a Buteyko instructor. They put them through a five-day program. Yeah, the Buteyko instructor was quite tough. You'll see the videos up on YouTube. One of the patients dropped out, was replaced by another. But all three patients, it changed their lives. And that was in 5 days. And these patients were at the end of the line in terms of their asthma in a hospital setting. We have to consider the social cost, the economic cost, and the moral cost. One of the women, for example, was hospitalized something like five or six times in that year up to that period. And I've seen it too. You know, I've seen people with asthma, regular hospitalizations. And I'm not saying that this is a cure-all, but I am saying that for some conditions, breathing can be very, very important, and functional breathing at that.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. In 5 days, it can make such a difference to those people. And I was reading a little bit on your site, there's a little bit about Dr. Protego, and it was talking there about, I think he had to prove the concept in order to be accepted by the medical establishment way back then. And I think it was 100% of the people actually had benefits from it, from the process.
In terms of, like, I can't remember that specific trial. I would have remembered them back 15 years ago or 20 years ago. And the clinical trials in Russia, Western medicine doesn't really consider them.
Yeah.
But in terms of the clinical trials here, most of them have, with the butycomethod, have been focused on asthma. There have been about 20 of them. They've all been positive, you know, with some varying in results. But typically, you know, if you look even at the results of the very first clinical trial that took place at the Mater Hospital in Brisbane back in 1994, published in 1998, individuals after 12 weeks, they had 70% less asthma symptoms, 90% less need for rescue medication, and 49% less need for inhaled corticosteroid. And the control group, which was taught the in-house hospital program, which would focus on physiotherapy and diaphragmatic breathing, had 0% progress. So, you know, the only reason that the Buteyko method was able to impart this success was because people with asthma, very much they breathe with an open mouth, they breathe faster, they breathe upper chest breathing, and this is feeding into their condition. Now, there are a couple of papers then looking at the benefits of Buteyko method on the Eustachian tube. Both of those have been positive. And when we look then, Peter, with breathing, we really have to look at the application of slow breathing and improving heart rate variability, because then it's not just about the limited research in Buteyko. Buteyko said slow down your breathing. And the best way to slow down your breathing is to breathe through your nose, because if you breathe through your mouth, you are not going to breathe slow. Mouth breathing is inevitably fast, upper chest breathing, fight or flight response. And for most people, it's very common that once we reach 40 years of age, that we spend, you know, 6 times more likely is what the research shows, that we spend at least 50% of our sleep time breathing through the nose and mouth and switching between the two. So you could have some of your listeners say, well, I've always got my mouth closed. Well, the question to ask is, do you have your mouth closed during physical exercise? Do you have your mouth closed during sleep? Because even if you have your mouth open during sleep, that 6 to 8 hours whereby you have had continued or, you know, intermittent switching from nose to mouth or combined breathing through your mouth during that time, not good for sleep quality. And the one thing about, I suppose, with many conditions, and including diabetes, lung breathing can be an issue with diabetes, as you will know, and sleep as well. And we need to target specifically. I was, into my mid-20s, chronically mouth breathing because of having a history of asthma. And if you have asthma, your nose is stuffy generally because inflammation of the lungs travels up to the nose and vice versa. It's a unified airway, and this is recognized since 2007. So we have to consider the bi-directional relationship of functions of the body and health. And through the breath, we can influence the autonomic nervous system. And very much where the research is at now is centered on slow breathing to improve heart rate variability. Because people who are unwell, both physically or mentally, have reduced heart rate variability. And we can help that group of people.
Okay. So heart rate variability, is important to vary the heart rate then?
Yeah, it's very important. If we have a heart rate that's consistently beating at the same, you know, the same time, heartbeat to heartbeat, it's not a good sign.
Right.
That there's a link between your respiration and the timing of your heartbeat. And typically during rest, as you breathe in, the heart rate should be getting faster. And on the exhalation, as you are breathing out, your heart rate should be getting slower. So the time between beats on the inspiration is shorter than the time between heartbeats on the exhalation, which is longer. And the breath itself, the in-breath is more sympathetically driven because the vagus nerve is stepping back a little bit. And on the exhalation, it's primarily activated by the parasympathetic response, or Also, by breathing out slowly, we can influence the parasympathetic response, and that's the body's rest and relaxation response. So by having slow breathing, and even more by bringing our breathing volume, by bringing and changing the respiratory rate down to between 4.5 and 6 breaths, 6.5 breaths per minute for certain periods during the day, that stimulates the vagus nerve. It increases the sensitivity of pressure receptors, which are in the major blood vessels, called baroreceptors. And increased sensitivity of the baroreceptors is a very important aspect of human health. You know, so we want, I suppose, the best thing about HRV is that it's a measurement of resilience. You know, if one of your listeners goes to their doctor and tells their doctor, "Doctor, I'm suffering from stress," how can the doctor measure the stress that it has had on that person's body? But with HRV, you can measure that. So it's a clinical measure of stress. And people who have gone through large periods of stress in their life will typically have reduced heart rate variability. So since the 1990s, with different researchers, and also with Stephen Porges with polyvagal theory, there's a lot of research now in this field. And with type 1, type 2 diabetes, with chronic fatigue syndrome, with fibromyalgia, irritable bowel syndrome, post-traumatic stress disorder, asthma, COPD, etc. And the one thing about Buteyko's work that, yes, HRV, that science wasn't around back in the 1950s. But normally, you know, when HRV is being targeted, people are looking specifically at slowing down the respiratory rate to between 4.5 and 6.5 breaths per minute. We need to look more at just the respiratory rate. We also need to look at, where is the person breathing? Are they breathing through their nose? Are they breathing through their mouth? Are they breathing high? Are they breathing low? And we also need to consider the amplitude of the breath. And I'm not saying that I'm not trying to confuse it, or I'm not trying to complicate things, but we can't just rely on one dimension of breathing. There are three dimensions of breathing: biochemical, biomechanical, and cadence breathing. And when we're working with individuals, we are giving them exercises to target all three. And the research then on that would be, is HRV, but nasal breathing during sleep, nasal breathing during exercise, reducing breathing volume, that you're taking less air into the body, all of those help to improve resilience of the human body.
Okay, so when you say you're working with people, you're like a breathing coach, I suppose.
I teach breathing exercises.
So you train people how to breathe better to get that heart rate variability. I'm assuming it's not just about heart rate variability. I know your book, I believe, is called The Oxygen Advantage. Is that right? So it must be something to do with the amount of oxygen you get into your system as well. Is there a difference, the amount of oxygen you get into your body, depend on the way you're breathing?
Yes, and that's looking at then the biochemistry, because when we breathe dysfunctionally, and dysfunction in certain cohorts of the population, to give you an example, a Cochrane review back in 2013 said that it affected about 9.5% of the general population, but other studies looking at asthma showed that it affected 30% of the asthma population and 80% of the anxiety population. But I believe that it's actually more in the normal population. And if I look at a paper by Kiesel, a physical therapy from the United States, looking at 51 healthy subjects, only 10% of them had functional breathing, and 90% of them had, to some degree, had an issue with their breathing. Now, I'm not saying that 90% of the population have dysfunctional breathing, but what I'm saying is, I'm pointing to Kiesel's paper, looking at 51 subjects. When we have dysfunctional breathing, it's very common to have cold hands and cold feet and brain fog, because the more air you breathe, while it's not necessarily increasing oxygen saturation in the blood, because the blood is already almost fully saturated with normal breathing, but breathing too much air gets rid of too much carbon dioxide from the blood through the lungs. And when we lose too much carbon dioxide, blood vessels constrict and the bond between oxygen and hemoglobin is increased. In other words, our blood circulation is influenced by how hard or how fast we breathe. And also, oxygen delivery from the blood to the tissues and organs is influenced by how fast and how hard we breathe. And I think most people will realize that if I was to tell them to take 10 big breaths in and out through their mouth, that they'll often feel lightheaded. And that's a sign of constriction of the main blood flow to the brain as a result of breathing in excess of what you need. So we have to turn on its head, you know, people who are learning yoga, people who are doing Pilates, and people who are, you know, learning breathing exercises, but in the process are encouraged to breathe more air. There's no benefits to breathing more air in that instance. And many people advise breathing more air on the basis that they believe that the more air you breathe, the more oxygen delivered throughout the body. That's not the case. If you want to increase oxygen delivery throughout the body, we have to go back to an effect called the Bohr effect, discovered back in 1904 by a Danish physiologist called Christian Bohr, B-O-H-R. And he spoke about the importance of carbon dioxide in the blood as a catalyst of the release of oxygen from the red blood cells to the tissues. There's no point in just having oxygen in the blood. We need to get that oxygen out of the blood. We need to get that oxygen delivered to tissues and organs, and carbon dioxide is a catalyst for that. But if we breathe too much air, we get rid of too much carbon dioxide and less oxygen is delivered.
Wow, I never knew that. So if you're really puffing and panting, gasping more air in on a run, for example, actually you might be reducing the amount of carbon dioxide that's going to allow the oxygen to get to your muscles, tissues.
Correct. Correct. Wow. And yeah, people will say, well, if I go for a run, surely my breathing is going to be faster. Yes, that's correct. But if you go for a run, metabolically, you're producing more carbon dioxide.
Yeah.
It's all about the relative change in your breathing. It's not a good sign. If you see people at rest and if you can hear their breathing during rest, not a good sign.
Right. Okay. Okay, Doug. So, we're on the diabetes show here. Specifically, what sort of benefits could people get from learning maybe some different types of ways of breathing? And what would those ways be? What have you got any practical suggestions for people?
Yeah, I think it's very important for people to make a conscious effort to breathe in and out through their nose. I think the mouth performs zero functions, none. No function is performed by the mouth in terms of the air coming into the body. Your nose is your primary defense. And just to give you a couple of things, what the nose does, it's obviously people will be aware that it's filtering the air, it's moistening the air, it's warming the air. But it also, there's a gas called nitric oxide. And as you breathe through your nose, you're carrying nitric oxide from your nose into your lungs. And nitric oxide redistributes the blood throughout the lungs. And this helps to improve the transfer of oxygen from the lungs into the blood. That the pressure of oxygen increases in the blood by 10%, that's the PO2, by 10% from nasal breathing. So number one is really be conscious of breathing in and out through your nose. Number two, it's really vitally important that you have your mouth closed during sleep. If you have your mouth open during sleep, your tongue is more likely to be on the floor or at least midway or on the floor of the mouth. And as a result, the tongue then is falling back into the airway. As your tongue is falling back into the airway and as your lower jaw is falling back into the airway, and as you're breathing harder through an open mouth, you're drying out the airway. And as you're breathing harder, you're creating resistance to breathing. So people who are snoring hard, especially through an open mouth, but not only snoring hard, that as you're breathing that hard, fast breath into your lungs through the mouth, it increases the risk of collapse of the airway. And if it's a partial collapse, it's called a hypopnea if it lasts for 10 seconds. And if it's a total collapse, it's called an apnea if it lasts for 10 seconds. So some partners will understand that they have, you know, their partners beside them in the bed and they're breathing hard. And the next thing is they stop breathing. Well, if you're stopping breathing, it's not a good sign. It's not a good sign for health. And it can be related to diabetes. Mm. And people with diabetes have increased risk of sleep apnea, but also sleep apnea can increase the risk in terms of a contributory aspect to diabetes. But it's not just about diabetes, it's also about cardiovascular health. And it's even linked with fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue syndrome, anxiety, depression, and Alzheimer's. So our sleep quality is vitally important. And I remember, you know, internationally, I would often speak at sleep congresses. And one doctor who was speaking there at many of the conferences that I spoke about was Dr. Christian Guimeneau. Now, he's since passed on about 10 months or so. He's a Stanford-based medical doctor, and he discovered, well, he didn't discover it, was around for a long time. He coined the phrase obstructive sleep apnea, and he also developed the severity apnea hypopnea index, which is a measure of the severity of sleep apnea. He spoke about the critical importance of restoring nasal breathing during sleep, the critical importance. And this information hasn't filtered down. People talk about sleep hygiene. They talk about, you know, don't be on your mobile phone, use blue light filter glasses, don't eat late at night, don't drink alcohol, do relaxation before you go to sleep, have an airy bedroom, have a dark bedroom, have a quiet bedroom. All those things are good. But who's talking about nose breathing? You will never get a good quality of sleep unless you breathe through your nose. And I would say that, you know, the research is that even a recent study showed sleep apnea severity, and I can send you on the 20. Sleep apnea, the severity of it doubles in this paper. And this paper was looking at 95 individuals with obstructive sleep apnea, that the severity of it doubled in individuals who were breathing through their mouth or breathing through their nose. Now, we use tape on the mouth at night. We have done so for 20 years. And before you think that it's duct tape or anything like that, no. We have a simple tape called MyoTape. It is my own tape, but I'm not here to plug it. You could use 3M MicroPore tape. You could get it down in the chemist. But MyoTape is a tape that surrounds the mouth to bring the lips together. So nobody should wake up with a dry mouth in the morning. If you breathe slowly, and the other thing is I would say is really slow down your breathing for 15 minutes before you go to sleep to help to activate the body's parasympathetic response. And you could even try it as this, you know, put one hand on your chest, put one hand just above your navel, tune into your breathing pattern and gently slow down the speed of the air as it comes into your nose. And at the top of the breath, bring a total feeling of relaxation to the body and have a very slow and relaxed, gentle breath out. After you breathe out, wait until you feel the need to breathe in again. Don't put a deliberate pause, but just wait until you feel the need to breathe in again. And when you feel the need to breathe in again, take a very soft and slow, gentle breath in. In actual fact, slow down your breathing to the point that you feel that you are not getting enough air. Don't hear your breathing. Don't hold your breath. Don't freeze your breathing. Just gently soften and slow down the speed of your breathing. And as you really slow down the speed of your breathing coming into the body, and at the top of the breath, you have a prolonged and relaxed exhalation, you will start to notice within about 3 to 4 minutes of practice, your hands will get warmer internally. You'll have increased watery saliva in the mouth and you will feel drowsy. And that's activation of the parasympathetic response, the body's relaxation response. Not by breathing hard, but by breathing light. And the other thing is that when you slow down your breathing to the point of air hunger, that you are not breathing enough air, your hands are getting warmer because of improved blood circulation. But of course, you're not just improving the circulation of the blood vessels in the hands. We have 70,000 miles of blood vessels throughout the human body. We are also improving the circulation throughout the human body. So, you know, it's and that's only one aspect of it, but I think it's worthwhile people giving it a go because, you know, if you just like the question here is, I'm saying is, you know, do the opposite to what you've been told. Like we've been told so much nonsense about breathing. I cringe sometimes when I hear people who are teaching breathing exercises and they are encouraging their students to take more air, to fill their lungs full of air. It's not good. Because all it's doing is causing everything to constrict. You know, we have to consider how do we breathe when we get stressed? We typically breathe faster and harder. Well, therefore, stressed breathing is faster, harder, upper chest breathing. Let's start doing the opposite to that. Let's start doing light breathing, nose breathing, slow breathing, driven by the diaphragm. And yes, one of the best things that you can do, take your attention out of the mind onto the breath, and bring some space to thoughts. From a psychological point of view, it also has its own benefits.
Okay, so people can literally start tonight by doing what you just shared. That's
absolutely
doesn't cost them a penny. They can just go ahead and do that and see if they can feel any of the benefits that you were talking about there. Next thing is they could perhaps get some of the, and you may not be plugging it, but and I haven't used it, but it sounds like a good idea, this tape, the MyoTape. So I can plug it for you. But listeners can perhaps get that and give that a try as a next stage. And what can they look for? Because I know there's this thing called the Bolt score. Is that going to improve? And I don't know, I can't remember which way is an improvement, which way is not.
Yeah.
Is that going to improve if they put into practice the exercise you said before going to bed, and then maybe the tape? Does that affect that?
Yeah, what I would say is, you know, bring nasal breathing into every aspect of your life. If you go for a walk, breathe in and out through your nose. If you're watching television, in and out through the nose. And even if you feel breathless, don't switch to fast upper chest breathing, because it's totally inefficient, totally uneconomical. It's about breathing nose, and it's about breathing slow, and it's about breathing low. So the earlier exercise we spoke about is reducing the volume of air that you breathe into your lungs. The next exercise you could try is simply having your hands on either side of your lower ribs. And as you breathe in, your ribs are gently moving out. And as you breathe out, your ribs are gently moving in. And as you breathe in, your ribs are gently moving out. And as you breathe out, your ribs gently move in. And not to hear your breathing. In other words, breathe deeply in the true sense of the word, but don't breathe big. Most people confuse deep with big. So to improve Bolt score is the measurement of comfortable breath hold time after an exhalation. And the Bolt score is measured as follows. You're sitting down for about 5 minutes. You take a normal breath in through your nose, a normal breath out through your nose. You pinch your nose with your fingers to hold the breath, and you time it in seconds. How long does it take until you feel the first definite desire to breathe? And then you let go and you breathe normal. A good score is above 25 seconds. That's a measure of functional breathing. And coming back to Kiesel's paper, K-I-E-S-E-L, who I mentioned earlier, he was developing as a professor of physical therapy, developing a screening test to identify dysfunctional breathing in the adult population. And he used the Bolt score, even though he didn't call it the Bolt score, but it's exactly the same measurement. His conclusion was that if your Bolt score is above 25 seconds, there is an 89% chance that dysfunctional breathing is not present. Now, many people have a Bolt score of less than 25 seconds. Many people will have a Bolt score of 10 seconds or 15 seconds. If you have a low Bolt score, it's typically an indicator that you breathe faster and you breathe using your upper chest. You will often be caught for breath. You might feel air hunger. You feel that no matter how hard you breathe, that you're just not getting enough air. If you go and do a physical exercise, you're running out of breath. You're gassing out too soon. During sleep, you are breathing hard during sleep. So it is about improving the Bolt score, but ultimately it's about achieving nose, slow and low breathing. And by achieving nose, slow and low breathing, your Bolt score improves and overall breathing patterns are improving. But to make a change to your breathing, you need to spend about 40 minutes to 60 minutes throughout the day. I know that sounds a lot, but maybe you already go out for a 20-minute walk. Instead of doing it with your mouth open, why not change to mouth closed? Slow down your walk if you have to. You're much better off going at a slower pace, breathing in and out through your nose, than a faster pace, breathing in and out through the mouth. Now, the third aspect...
You could actually use your myo tapes during the daytime. Yes. Most people got masks on all the time now anyway. So.
Totally. Yeah, totally. In actual fact, we're developing a tape for sports, for athletes.
Okay.
Because we need a tape for cyclists, for example, to get them to breathe through the nose, but also if they need to take a water bottle, that they can use it. So yeah, that's true about the masks. It's very, very simple stuff, and people have nothing to lose by putting it into practice. The reason that I came into this work, I came across this work by accident back in 1998 from having continuous asthma for 20 years in and out of hospital. And all that was happening was my medication was getting worse, but I just didn't have asthma. I was exhausted all the time. And it's very common if you have dysfunctional breathing, if you're breathing fast and hard, and if your nose is stuffy, you're 1.8 times more likely to have moderate to severe sleep disorder breathing. and that's including snoring and sleep apnea. So it's not just that we have a breathing problem. Our breathing issue is feeding into anxiety, is feeding into stress, is feeding into poor sleep, and is feeding into poor health. And, you know, I'm not saying that this is a cure-all, but I am saying that people are talking about nutrition and talking about physical exercise. Well, the third pillar is good breathing.
Mm. I'm a great believer in testing and measuring, so I like this idea of the bulk score. I'm going to suggest to people, I don't know if you agree, but maybe they do that bulk test 2-3 times and then take an average of whatever their results
yes.
are. And then maybe they have a chart somewhere where their spouse maybe tells them how much snoring there's reduced or whatever. But once they've implemented more nasal breathing, or once they've decided to take their mouth or whatever, so they can actually see.
Yeah.
Because often there can be changes, but you're not maybe really aware of it, and then you just end up giving up and forgetting about it. But if you can really test and measure how your bulk score is improving, whether you're snoring less, whether you're not having as much times of sleep apnea, then you know, obviously it's going to encourage you to carry on doing it.
Yeah, totally. I think many people anyway, like how many people wake up in the morning feeling tired and they kind of just get on with it, you know?
Mm.
So when you started breathing through, and that's how I realized there was something in this. On the second morning after taping up, I started taping 20 years ago, and the second or even more, 22 years ago. And the second morning after taping up, I used a nasal dilator across my nose to open up my nose. Now we can open up the nose, by the way, just in case people are thinking, if you have nasal congestion, hold your breath to open up your nose, but don't hold your breath for too long. Well, don't do it if you're pregnant, and don't do it if you've got any serious medical conditions. But, you know, for if you have a stuffy nose or a head cold, breathe in through your nose, breathe out through your nose, hold your nose, and gently nod your head up and down, holding your breath for maybe 25, 30 or 40 seconds, and then let go and breathe in through your nose. Wait a minute and do it again. Do it 5 or 6 times. And your nose will open up. And for those of you with children, our entire breathing program is free online.
Okay.
And we put it free a few years ago because I felt that there was a resistance to breathing. I felt that there was a reluctance in healthcare, that people weren't taking it seriously. And we know, Peter, and I can send you on any of these studies, there was a study carried out by Karen Bonnock, and it was published in a fairly well prestigious medical journal in 2011. And she looked at 11,000 children in Stratford-upon-Avon. She's an American researcher. Children with sleep disorder breathing, and mouth breathing is often a contributory factor to that. If untreated, these children had a 40% increased risk of special education needs by age 8.
Wow.
And nobody's telling these kids to breathe through the nose.
Mm.
And we know that study after study, and there's quite a few studies now showing that between 25 to 50% of studied children persistently mouth-breathe. Mm. It's affecting the development of their face. It results in crooked teeth. Their jaws are set back in the airways, so it increases the risk of sleep apnea for life. These children, their brains are developing. They have there is an 80% chance of a permanent 20% reduction in their mental capacity unless sleep and breathing is addressed. And I feel it's terrible, you know. There was a book that was published recently which has hit the New York Times bestseller called Brett. And I got a copy of it because the publishers asked me to write a testimonial on it, and I did. And I said it was one of the best books I've ever read on breathing. And this man, James Nestor, is a journalist, and he spent 4 years investigating the benefits, or not just the benefits, but just investigating breathing through the nose, heart rate variability, all the stuff that we've been saying for 22 years. And he was on Chris Evans there just a couple of weeks ago, you know, and his book was number one, I think, on Amazon.co.uk of all books for a period of time.
Wow.
So breathing is starting to get out there.
Yeah.
And by having a journalist approach it from the point of view, because I teach it, you know, so people might say that I'm biased, but it's not about that, because I have nothing really to sell. You know, I'm just saying breathe through your nose and really practice the exercises. And my time, that's, you know, you charge for your time. But even with that, it's one of the best investments, you know. what is it, about £80 for 2 hours in a small group setting. And that can lead to considerable benefits. So I really felt that's why I put the children's courses out online for free. And we did that several years ago to make sure that any child, if they wanted to get access to the material, they could do so and there was no cost.
Okay. Well, my son makes some funny noises at night time, so I might have a look at that. Please tell us where listeners can find out more about the children's thing, but just generally, maybe they want to contact you and get some coaching. I don't know. Where can people find out more, please?
Sure. Like, I've loads of stuff on Amazon as well, amazon.co.uk. I've got 8 books published for children, for teenagers, for anxiety, for sleep. The Oxygen Advantage is kind of for sports. One website is butecoclinic.com. And the free children's course is butecoclinic.com/butecochildren. So butecoclinic.com/butecochildren.
And that's spelled B-U-T-E-Y-K-O, isn't it?
Yeah, correct. Yeah, Buteco cool. Clinic. But there's other things, like we've courses on anxiety, courses on people for sleep apnea, of course with asthma. And I'd say to people, if you have asthma, go into YouTube and look at the BBC documentary. And it's a bit entertaining as well. You've got a Russian Buteco instructor, and he wouldn't have the best table manners. But you know what? Doesn't matter. It's the culture coming through. He got results, and that's all that matters. And that's really where it's at.
Cool. Well, I'm going to have to wrap things up now because I've got to get to a patient. Thank you so much for all you've shared. No doubt we'll have you back on the show again at some point, and I'm going to be putting some of this into practice. You have my word. Thank you so much.
Great. Thanks, Peter.
And that is it for this week's show. You've been listening to Peter Alton with The Diabetes Show here on UK Health Radio, your global, real, feel-good radio station. All that remains is for me to say have a fantastic week. Stay safe in the diabetes sweet spot. Live in the ideal diabetic lifestyle. I look forward to sharing more with you next week. Take good care and God bless.